from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll talk with author Kurt Meyer about his novel set in Noblesville.
I'll find out what's new at the Madam Walker Urban Life Center.
And I'll find out about this year's Indie Folk Series, and we'll have that calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Like his novel, Noblesville's protagonist David, Kurt Meyer lives in Noblesville and loves history and historic architecture. But Kurt lets fiction take over and sweep his characters along a grand time travel adventure, as Sharon Gamble learned when she invited Kurt to our studios. He began with a passage from the novel.
Well, this book is really a time travel story, and one of the things that the main character takes back in time with him is his iPhone, to share music with the family that he's staying with. And one of the things that he chooses is a best of album by Nat King Cole. And so this is happening in 1893, and the young woman in the family has taken to his iPhone and those little white earbuds. And this is a moment describing that. Later in her bedchamber, Mary went through the nightly ritual that meant physical freedom to her. She undressed. After turning up the gaslight, she unlaced the hard, uncomfortable black shoes that bound her ankles and feet. As the air reached them, the blood seemed to return for the first time since she dressed in the morning. She slipped down the heavy dark stockings and rubbed the ache out of her feet. She took off her dress and hung it near the window to air out, and stood before the porcelain wash basin that sat on the dresser, washing her face and arms and the back of her neck. She placed the basin on the floor in front of the bed and sat down, putting her feet into soak. She wore the tiny white earbuds. At the end of the wire, the black glass-covered cell phone lay on the linen coverlet, the screen glowing with an array of multicolored boxes. Reaching back with the practiced flexibility of a contortionist, she untied her corset and worked her fingers into the laces, loosening the confining undergarment. For the first time since morning, she took a deep breath, shoving her chest out. The seams, eyelets, hems, and laces left deep pink lines in her back, breasts, and stomach. Mary slid her hand into the loose corset, rubbing life back to her skin, massaging the pink lines on her stomach and the freckles that peppered her breasts. She unfastened her smooth black hair and let it fall down her back. Falling back across the bed, her feet dangling in the cool water, Nat King Cole breathed into her ears his sensual, soothing tones of comfort. She fanned her slip to cool her legs. The corset, the shoes, the dress from neck to heel, they were all stone coverings of a statue, tightened and pulled into position each day for display. That's how she felt about it. He probably thinks I'm a snob. She didn't want him to see her now like this. That would be a scandal. But if he could, he'd see that she was warm and real, and not just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art.
Hmm. And for those struggling right now, what Nat King Cole song is that?
That was Mona Lisa.
Mona Lisa, yeah. Which becomes the pet name of one of the characters for another.
Sure.
So take us to the origins of this story. How did this story come to you?
Well, I was restoring a house in Noblesville on Cherry Street and thinking a lot about the family who had restored the house. And that was really triggered scraping wallpaper and finding the name of one of the sons of the family that built our house. Mm. He had written his name in pencil on the wall in 1898. And I'd done a little bit of research about the family and realized that that young man became a doctor. And I did a lot of research about the family, and I got to thinking about their lives and what their lives were like compared to what my family's life was like in the house in the 1990s when I first started writing this story. And so I first set out to write a story that just talked about the difference between life in the 1890s in a small town and life today in the same place. And it just took on a life of its own.
Absolutely. There's a lot of rich detail about what characters are thinking and feeling. And I understand how it's pretty easy to research, oh, that's what a typical front doorknob looked like in 1890. Mm-hmm. And here's what a typical one looks like if you go down the street to Home Depot or Lowe's today. How did you do the emotional research to set up these two time periods?
Well, I mostly just thought about my own reactions. Our main character, David Henry, is restoring an old house, and he's an old house architecture nerd, just like I am. And so, you know, if you found parts of an old house, say a beautiful brass doorknob that's been painted, 10 or 15 times, and you strip that paint off and all of that detail comes clear. It's like in the book, David describes it as runes from some ancient lost language, and you start thinking, why are things so plain now? And you can find beauty in the plainness, but the rich detail kind of triggers your imagination and makes you wonder about the people who chose those things originally.
Also makes you wonder if the pendulum is going to swing back the other way. Maybe the companion novel, your next novel, can be time travel between 2014 and, you know, a century from now.
That would be interesting, and that would be true science fiction, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I was surprised the first time this book was reviewed. Somebody said, I think the opening comment was, I don't normally like science fiction, and I never for a moment thought of this book as science fiction.
No.
I thought of it as a romance and historical fiction.
Yeah. And I love that. I've got to figure out how to talk about this without revealing the secret, but I love that modern technology is involved in creating the portal to travel between
yes.
the two times.
Yes, and I use some of my personal experiences with the technology in my house over the years when it disturbed things and made special things happen in an old house. I always found that interesting, so I couldn't help but use that.
You had a great deal of fun, I gather, writing not only about the day-to-day life of these characters in the town of Noblesville, but you give them a reason to get on a train and go to Chicago.
Right. And that's, you know, I was did obviously quite a lot of research about the 1890s, tried not to assume that I knew everything. And that was good because as I researched, I realized many of my assumptions about life back then were just simply wrong.
For example?
Well, we think that people didn't divorce back then. But we have a great book set right here in Indiana based on research called The Middletown Studies, done in the 1920s. Mm-hmm. But they use the 1890s as their benchmark. And the divorce rate in Muncie was 7%. And if you do that math, it meant that everybody knew somebody who was divorced back then. And there's quite a lot of evidence, not to get into too much detail, quite a lot of evidence that premarital sex was not as rare as we sometimes, or maybe as our grandparents told us it was.
There you go. There's the reality and the portrayal.
But doing research, I didn't know a thing before I started this book about the Chicago World's Fair of 1893 and what a fascinating event it was. And people in small towns like Noblesville in the Midwest were all going. That's another thing. We were always told, well, once upon a time, people never passed beyond the county borders. That was just utterly false in a place like Hamilton County. There were two trains that went through town, one that would take you to Louisville or Chicago, one that would take you to St. Louis or out east. And as I went through the newspapers and diaries, I found an endless list, literally hundreds and hundreds of people from town got on the train and went to Chicago for that World's Fair. Actually, it was the most heavily attended temporary event in U.S. history, more than any Olympics before or after.
No way.
More than any other World's Fair.
Really?
Yeah, they believe more people went. But I think one of the fascinating things, too, about that fair is you might have on a street corner encountered a young Harry Houdini doing tricks and magic. You might, there was a street corner that actually had a piano and various pianists came out and would play for people walking by. One of those was a Scott Joplin just a few years before he would revolutionize music with ragtime.
Wow.
And you can go on and on with inventions that were presented there. It's quite fascinating.
And the electric lights.
Yes. You know, people were aware of electric light, but before that, and many towns had it, as Noblesville had some street lights that were electric at that time. But it was the most lit place in the world electrically at that time, the World's Fair in Chicago, 1893.
Really stunning, and a great adventure for the young couple in the novel. There are, I'm going to refer to my day job now in historic preservation. I love that you referred to some actual preservation stories that have happened in Noblesville. There's also a lot of politics in the book. Is that how, did you research the politics, or is that speculation? That, like, there's a scandal that has to do with transportation, for example.
Sure. Well, you know, the events that actually take place in the book in 1893 actually happened in 1893 in Noblesville. I did not manufacture them. I didn't make them up. I simply took what had actually happened in town. And there was a significant political character in Noblesville who many thought was a potential future governor nominee for the GOP, who was involved in a scandal that destroyed his career that summer. And, you know, Hamilton County is a Republican town in, these days, but back in the 1890s, there was a Republican paper and a Democratic newspaper. Mm-hmm. And so interesting to comment on those things and to understand how things change. And there were some political notions that were also cultural notions about how to behave and who's a good person and not a good person. I'm thinking mostly of social Darwinism was a deeply held belief at that time. And I think still has a place in some people's hearts in America today. So it seemed right for a young fellow to come in contact with beliefs that if you really lay them out in the stark light of day are kind of unpleasant.
Mm-hmm. There's a yearning for some of the community passion and commitment, too, that our protagonist discovers in 1893.
Well, he's yearning. He's a product of divorce, and his family, a brother and his mother, live far away, though he's still in the town where he grew up. He's a little bit estranged from his father, and some of that came from my years as a school teacher. When I wrote this, I was a high school teacher, and I was very close to many of my students, and I simply reflected the kinds of experiences that they were having with divorce, which, though I say it happened in 1893, it happens with far greater frequency now, and it's a little bit easier to see how it affects young people. So I thought it seemed natural that that my main character felt a little dislocated in this world, a little disconnected from his neighbors and his family, and he is very attracted to that when he gets to 1893, the deep connections that people rely on between one another.
In particular, one of the scenes that struck me, stood out above others, was when he marvels that the laborers who've come from all over the place to work on this railroad are suddenly out of jobs, and he can't believe how the community embraces them, feeds
right.
them, shelters them, finds jobs.
It's an interesting thing. It was a tough time in America, in much of America in 1893. There was a recession in the works, but it wasn't so much the case in central Indiana because of the natural gas boom. And so there was money and activity here that was perhaps missing in other parts of the country. And so there was a great deal of hardship for laborers, but there is a moment when a large number of workers lose their jobs in Noblesville, and I found ample evidence that the churches and social groups came together as best they could to help as many of those people as they could.
So if you could, would you step through the beam into 1893 to stay?
You know, like most wonderful places I've visited on vacation, yes, I would to visit. I would to visit. And that's the question for our character. Does he want to stay? And like many of us in real life, he's not entirely seeing things as they are. He's not weighing things evenly, and the reader can see that from time to time. But one of the things that I do find fascinating is the way that people bring their preconceived feelings and ideas about the past to this. For I'll have people say to me, "I just think it's so wrong the way you made the past look so wonderful and so perfect." And then I'll have people come to me and say exactly the opposite, yet they both read the same book. And I actually like that. I like that people are forced to kind of toy with those ideas in their own mind.
Sharon Gamble with novelist Kurt Meyer. The book you just heard about is called Noblesville. You can find out more about Kurt and his writing and order Noblesville at riversedgemedia.com/Noblesville. Again, riversedgemedia.com/Noblesville.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. There are lots of new things happening at the Madam Walker Urban Life Center, including a performance by Savion Glover this weekend. Travis DiNicola spoke with the center's new president, Kathleen Spears, about the theater.
Kathleen, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to see you.
Good to see you, too. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And congratulations on your new position running the Madam Walker Theater. That's great news.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Yeah. So you were interim starting, what, last January, and then officially you became the director in the spring?
That's right.
Excellent.
Yeah. So I started January 15th interim and became official April 25th.
That is very, very cool. So I want to ask you a question because I saw in some materials, I always think of as just Madam Walker Theater or sometimes Madam Walker Theater Center, but I've been seeing more of Madam Walker Urban Life Center. Mm-hmm. And that sort of suggests more than just the theater. Is that the idea behind
that? Right. Yes, absolutely. So back in the late 70s, we were incorporated as a bona fide 501c3, and our official business corporation name is the Madam Walker Urban Life Center.
Okay.
And it's named that because we do encompass more than the historic theater.
Mm-hmm.
So our mission is to advance the legacy of our namesake through art, entertainment, cultural education, youth empowerment, civic engagement, entrepreneurship. And so when you think about entrepreneurship, civic engagement, and youth empowerment, those really give rise to or lend to why we call ourselves the Urban Life Center.
Sure.
And so we really work through our youth empowerment program to instill cultural pride and civic pride and engage youth at a very early age in becoming active members of the community, active participants. And through our civic engagement programming, engaging the community and helping them to develop an articulate voice and engaging in resolving issues that affect the community.
Could you give me an example of one of those programs or a type of program that connects to those issues?
Sure. So under youth empowerment, we have a program called Project Pride,
mm-hmm.
and that takes youth ages 6 to 16 and helps them to develop a better understanding of their own culture, having a sense of cultural identity, but also the community. And it helps them to identify issues in the community that affect them and also ways to articulate resolutions to the issues. And so we're really building the next generation of social activists and business leaders and maybe even politicians. But
mm-hmm.
For example, the recent wave of crime, and a lot of adults got together and talked about what needed to happen to cut crime. And no one really asked the youth. No one really asked the young people who were in some cases causing the crime.
Mm-hmm.
And so our Project Pride engages them and says, hey, what do you see happening in the community and how do you think we can resolve this issue? And,
okay.
and really applies a voice. And so our civic engagement, we have a program coming up. It's a panel and it's going to be led by Senator Breaux. And it's basically about how to get your voice heard through the proper channels.
Hmm.
So whether it's a political issue or economic issue or wherever, how to get your issues resolved.
Very cool. And you mentioned also offerings in entrepreneurship. Obviously, that's something that was very important to Madam C.J. Walker, as she was an incredible entrepreneur.
Oh, right. She was our nation's first self-made female millionaire through her own doing. And of course, she owned the property that the Madam Walker Theater Center currently is on,
mm-hmm.
at 617 Indiana Avenue. And she bought that through her own dealings through hair care and cosmetics, primarily for African Americans. And so what we do in entrepreneurship, Travis, is we really engage the community in learning about how to become the next Madam Walker.
Mm-hmm.
And so we bring in...
Which would be a pretty cool thing for anybody.
I know, right? Because, she built her business with $1.25. So,
wow.
Of course, that was back in the early 1900s. $1.25 was a little bit more than it is now. But so we're bringing in Bethany Frankel from The Real Housewives of New York and Skinny Girl cocktail fame. And she's going to share her story as a female entrepreneur and how she went, from a small business owner to huge multi-million dollar business owner. And we're also going to have a panel of local businesses, female business owners who are going to share their stories and the perils and pitfalls of starting a business and really encourage others to stick to it. And
that's really cool.
Yeah, I'm excited about it.
So let's talk about some upcoming things that are going on in the theater that are part of the art season that Madam Walker offers, including great concert that's taking place this weekend. If you're listening to us on Thursday night, you can still go on Friday night. If you're listening to us Saturday morning on Art of the Matter, sorry about this, because Friday night, Savion Glover is performing at the Madam Walker, 8 o'clock. You guys got to be so excited to have him here.
We are. And, you know, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And this piece is really centered around bringing awareness to domestic violence.
Hmm.
And he's got two other people that will be with him, a vocalist and a drummer. And he, of course, will be the main act and doing some tap. But it's called Maria's Voice, and it tells the story of Maria Salazar, a woman who, I won't spoil it for you, but mm-hmm. she had an issue with domestic violence. And it really explores the emotional impact on the family as well as the individual. And we're hoping that people that come will be entertained, but also mm-hmm. educated and empowered. And so we've opened this up to domestic violence organizations if they have survivors that they want to bring. We're really wow. making it a community event. Yes.
But it is still a concert. I mean, people who are expecting to see Savion Glover tap dance in his amazing way, they're still going to get to see him tap.
Right. They are going to see him tap dance, and they're going to hear some amazing vocalists
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be a great event. And yeah, it's not going to be all tap. It's going to be a little mixture. Yeah.
That's really cool. I didn't know that he was doing a performance like that. And it's mm-hmm. great to have that at the Walker. I know there's another one coming up for Martin Luther King Day that you are very personally excited about. Tell me a bit about this.
Yeah, I am. We're bringing in Sarah Collins Rudolph, who in some areas of the media is referred to as the fifth little girl. So we all know about the four little girls who lost their life in the 16th Street Baptist Church bombing, or we should from history. And this is the fifth little girl. Her sister, Addie Mae, was one of the four little girls who died. But Sarah survived. She was severely injured and lives with some disabilities as a result. But she survived. And so she's going to tell her story of survivor guilt, having been in the same church with her sister and just hugged her and was just feet away from her when the bomb went off. And how she relives that practically day after day. And her message is going to be that we really need to come together as a community and focus on ensuring Dr. King's legacy. And I'm really excited about that. Not many people know about her struggle and what she went through. And it's free. It's sponsored by the Lilly Endowment.
That's
and
pretty
so,
fantastic.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, that's going to be on January 19th, 2015. That's a early morning thing, 8 a.m. Mm-hmm. But it is going to be free. That's one. I mean, she just must be an incredible speaker.
I've had the pleasure of speaking with her on the phone to set this up. And mm-hmm. I had to, you know, hang up because I was just so emotionally moved and I was in tears by the time we finished talking. But so we'll start it off with the Freedom March from the Urban League over to the Walker, and then we'll have her. She's going to keynote, and we'll have a few other people involved too. But it's a very good story.
Very good. That's wonderful. Tell me about some other highlights coming up in your season, especially on the entertainment side.
Okay. Well, if you're not doing anything on October 21st of 2014, this year, mm-hmm. The Senegal St. Joseph's Choir will perform in our ballroom, and they are coming straight from Dakar. They sing. It's really cool what they do is they sing old hymns and spirituals, and they talk about the origination of it. So, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of African-American hymns that we sing in church, that many people sing, really, they talk about how it originated in different parts of Africa. And it's a really good, motivational, soul-stirring performance. And so that will be happening on October 21st. And the last Friday of every month, we have Jazz on the Avenue.
Yep.
Where we feature local jazz bands. And
Very good stuff.
So, coming up, I guess we have Free Flow in October and all that in November. We just had Paradigm in September. So if you go on our website, you can see who's lined up, who's coming. And then I'm also very excited.
And let me just say, I think it's great that you guys have a regular jazz series because, I mean, Indiana Avenue, where the Madam Walker Theater is, I mean, that was such the hub of Indiana jazz for so many years. And it's awesome that you guys are honoring that and bring that back with the monthly series.
Oh, absolutely. Jazz is really at the core of our theater. So the theater was built in 1927, opened in 1928, and it was a movie theater. So mm-hmm. a lot of people probably know the story, but Madam was required to pay extra to go to a movie theater because she was Black. And so she said, well, let's build our own theater.
So cool. So it's such a great story.
It is. And so it's originally a theater, but it evolved into the, you know, really the epicenter for music and celebration, largely in the African-American community. And Madam's daughter, Alelia, was really an active participant in the Harlem Renaissance. And mm-hmm. so it was really by her influence that a lot of what happened at the theater in the early 30s, late 20s and 40s became, you know, evolved into what it was. And so we love Jazz on the Avenue. It's one of our longest running, oldest programs. And it's fun, Travis, for mm-hmm. me, because as a transplant to Indianapolis and as someone who's new to the Walker, I see our mission in action firsthand because these are people who were in their 70s and 80s who remember the Walker way back when. And so they come and take in some jazz and they even dance a little. And, you know, it's really an exciting event. It's intimate. It's in our ballroom.
And again, the Jazz on the Avenue is last Friday of each month, 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. on those Friday nights. $10 for the concert. You also offer dinner for 10 and then there's a cash bar, too.
Right.
So definitely an adults event.
Right.
And stuff. But very cool. It's really great you guys offer that.
Yeah. Yep.
So what else are you excited about coming up at the Madam Walker?
Well, in January, we will have the Indianapolis Men's Chorus, mm-hmm. and I'm thrilled to see them perform on the Walker stage. And I've just heard that they're entertaining and a good show, and so we're working with Greg Sanders over there to bring that to the Walker. And then in April, Macy Gray, Solstress, and mm-hmm. just fantastic R&B artist, will be headlining our Spirit Awards. And so, you know, if you know anyone in the community who is, or in not necessarily in Indianapolis, could really be in the nation, it's a national award, mm-hmm. Who is deserving of an award that carries Madam Walker's name, the nomination process can be found on our website. So we give out the awards, and then we have a big concert, and Macy Gray is headlining that for us. And she was so excited when we talked about it being the Madam Walker Theater, and she's like, wow. Yeah, I want to do that.
Nice. Well, Kathleen, it sounds like a lot of great stuff going on at the Madam Walker Urban Life Center, and great stuff that you're doing. Again, congratulations on your relatively new position in running the Madam Walker, and great to hear from you.
Thank you. And, you know, I invite anyone out for a tour of the facility. It's got some great, it's got a lot of its original architecture and a lot of its original 1927 beauty, so if you're ever riding around and you see our big, gorgeous building on the corner of Indiana and Dr. King, stop in.
Travis DiNicola with Kathleen Spears, President and CEO of the Madam Walker Urban Life Center. Savion Glover performs at the Walker on Friday, October 10th. To get more information about that and everything else the center has to offer, visit thewalkertheater.org, and that's theater with an R-E at the end, thewalkertheater.org. Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
The weather has been telling us that we're really in October now.
October.
Cold winds. Ooh.
Yes. Wow, that's some scary stuff there, Sharon.
Yeah, I know, but we have some things that aren't too scary on our calendar we call
What'll We Do?
And well, don't worry, we will have some Halloween events.
You know, well, since you did do the boo,
yes.
I'm just going to start off with the zoo boo at the zoo, of course, because that is going on every weekend from now through Halloween, and it is just a fun event that takes place at the zoo, and it's great to dress up your little kids and take them there. And of course, all the animals are dressed in costumes, or maybe not. But each weekend that ZooBoo takes place, it is from 2 to 7 p.m. at the zoo, and that goes through October 26th.
I was shopping recently, and I walked by an end cap display at a certain local retailer, and mm-hmm. I thought, oh, please tell me those are dog costumes, because there were these tiny little like there is nothing like a dame coconut bra and grass skirt sort of things. And I went back and looked more carefully. Yes, they were meant for your dogs. Probably not for your cats.
Okay.
Although
cats aren't so good about wearing costumes.
They really aren't. They really aren't. Hey, here's something that's not scary at all. In fact, it's a lot of fun. Happy Hour at the Symphony is back on Thursday, October 23rd, with a happy hour at 5 and a performance at 6:30 featuring Time for Three, artists in residence and creative directors, concert, food, and drink included in your ticket price, and a chance to meet fun, like-minded folks at Hilbert Circle Theater. Again, that's coming up on Thursday, October 23rd. You might get away with wearing a costume, though, because that's getting pretty close to Halloween.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. Hey, speaking of the symphony, this is kind of a neat partnership between the symphony and CTS, Christian Theological Seminary. They're doing a series of sort of concerts and discussions that celebrate the connections between music and spirituality. And Matt Bolton, who's the president of CTS, and then Gary Ginsling, who's the CEO of the symphony, are getting together for pre-performance discussions. The first one is actually happening this Friday night on October 10th, Mozart's Requiem. They're also doing one on December 19th for The Messiah, and then they have a couple planned in the spring as well. You can get more information about these concerts at CTS and this collaboration if you go to cts.edu.
Well, it is a brave soul who dares to come to David Letterman territory with a comedy show, isn't it? Well, Jay Leno's just the guy who can do that, and he's going to be at Clues Memorial Hall on Saturday, October 18th, with special musical guest Kevin Eubanks.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, and he's going to talk a lot about his two-decade-plus career and late-night comedy, but probably also a little bit about his cars and some other fun things. Again, that's coming up. Jay Leno with Kevin Eubanks at Clues Memorial Hall, Saturday, October 18th, 8 p.m. Get your tickets early because those are going to go fast.
Very cool. Hey, Rhythm Discovery Center is doing their first ever Rhythm Live event on October 11th. You can learn about the history of jazz drumming and cymbals from educator and percussionist Bob Prethop, and it is taking place at the Rhythm Discovery Center, which is sort of just below the Arts Garden downtown. And they're having a session called Symbolism, and that's spelled with a C, C-Y-M, Symbolism.
Oh, I get it. That's
a history
clever.
Of jazz drumming and cymbals. Yeah. So that's going to be taking place. It's free on Saturday the 11th from noon to 1:30 at the Rhythm Discovery Center. And if you're not able to attend, the Rhythm Discovery Center is going to do a live streaming of the event through their website.
I was afraid you were going to say they'll chase you down and with rhythm.
They'll chase you down with mallets.
That's right, and cymbals. Hey, we promised you some October-worthy events. The Blair Witch Project, October 24th at the 100 Acres Art and Nature Park at the IMA. Well, regardless of whether you thought it was a great film or not, it was certainly distinctive. And it's going to have its strengths accentuated when it's shown in its own natural environment, the woods behind the IMA. It's part of the Indie Film Fest's Roving Cinema series. Kind of creepy. Yeah, Blair Witch Project, October 24th at the IMA.
Hey, we talked about a new performance venue called The Warehouse just a couple weeks ago, and they are having their first musical event, Art and Harmony, this weekend. It's a singer-songwriter showcase on Saturday the 11th from 6 to 8 p.m. Four different musicians are going to be featured throughout the evening. It's kind of a casual acoustic-style concert. Each act gets their own set, and it's part of a series that they're going to start doing as well. The Warehouse just opened up in Carmel, and they're located on 1st Avenue Southwest, adjacent to the Monon Trail. It's kind of a cool new performance site, definitely worth checking out. You can get more information about who the musicians are and other events at the Warehouse at liveforthemusic.com. Again, liveforthemusic.com.
Love it. I have something else kind of creepy. Benjamin Harrison, presidential. You do that so well. You might want to volunteer your services for the Harrison Holmes Candlelight Theater presentation. It's called Cold-Blooded, and it runs October 10th.
Oh, my.
through the 11th and the 17th through the 19th. It delves into an investigation of Jacob and Nancy Jane Young's violent deaths in 1868. Prominent Indianapolis attorney Benjamin Harrison was brought in to prosecute Nancy Clem, who was the first woman tried for murder in the state of Indiana. You might have read about this. It was quite sensational and got lots of newspaper coverage. Audience members have the opportunity to be a part of the jury and will decide for themselves if Clem was guilty of the horrific crime. BHPsite.org or call 317-631-1888 for more about Cold-Blooded at the Harrison Home.
Sounds spooky.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, something fun to consider doing this fall. On weekends, the Indianapolis Traditional Music and Dance Group is going to be hosting a weekend of contra dancing with live music on Friday evenings through Sunday afternoons at the Zion Evangelical United Church of Christ in downtown Indy. The Mean Lids and the Ripples, two of the nation's most popular bands for contra dancing. That's right, the Mean Lids and the Ripples are going to be playing tunes of Celtic and British Isles and bluegrass and swing and jug band and Cajun and country and all types of stuff. And you can come and dance. No experience necessary. You don't even need talent or a partner, but you must have clean shoes because no street shoes are allowed. So you do have to bring clean shoes. To get the whole schedule and find out everything that they're doing, you go to IndyContra.org. That's Indy, C-O-N-T-R-A, IndyContra.org.
So much fun.
That's right.
Hey,
I love it. No talent or partner necessary, but
you
got to
have the clean shoes. But the chance to dance to the Ripples and Mean Lids, my goodness, how can you pass that up?
Right.
Hey, Saturday.
Last thing you got,
Saturday, October 18th, 7 o'clock, Leather and Lace, the 17th annual Buckaroo Bash, one of the Idle George's biggest fundraisers. Proceeds from the event purchase art supplies for visiting students and support education programs such as artists in residence, gallery interpreters, et cetera, et cetera. Get more information at idlejorg.org and dust off your leather and lace and try out your costume.
That's a good reason to wear a costume.
Indeed.
Well, you can learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide. That's the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide website, indiearts.org/guide. And, of course, you can join us next week on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
The 14th Annual Indie Folk Series has lots of shiny music to tempt you, from newgrass to ballads to open mic nights and more. Sharon Gamble got the notes from Indie Folk Series organizer Dan Henkel.
So on the day we're having this conversation, we've learned that Scotland is, in fact, staying with its motherland.
Keeping the band together.
They wouldn't say it that way. Keeping the band together, that's right. But I don't know why. Maybe because I have a little Scots heritage, but I've been fascinated by this vote. And I love watching democracy in process. Listeners, you're wondering, what's this have to do with Indie Folk Series? You're going to tell us.
I am. Well, so much of the music that we love and are inspired by comes from Scotland.
Comes from
the other Celtic countries.
Indeed. And folk music's pretty democratic.
I think folk music is the ultimate democracy, both in the process by which it's created, what Pete Seeger called the folk process, and you borrow and steal and adapt and base one thing on another and just add your own to it, but also in how it's presented. We have a great richness of house concerts and impromptu performances, street performances, the busking.
Mm-hmm.
And with today's technology, you can have your own record label. You can self-publish and promote. That's all great. And I think folk musicians do more of the sharing and borrowing than, say, classical musicians who do. Bach borrowed a lot of things from his contemporaries and himself. And everybody wrote something based on Paganini's 24th Caprice.
Right.
But in folk music, that is the whole process. But the presentation of it has so many options and more than ever. And I think that's the heart of the Indie Folk Series. It's do it yourself. Only the artists get paid. Everybody else is having fun and just pitching in.
Sure. So as somebody who has played folk music for years, is it Have you ever been in a situation where somebody's been offended that another musician borrowed from him or her? Or is it more of a compliment?
I have not heard of such a thing.
Yeah.
I think I've heard of cases of people being in the music studio and, say, borrowing a track. This is in another genre, like rock musicians may borrow a track and take that drum beat or take the bass line and make their own thing from it without permission, and that's an intellectual property issue. But I think it's deep flattery when someone takes your tune or your groove or likes a verse. You may not like what they do with it, but people understand it's part of the process.
Yeah, it's part of the evolution. Things just keep going and going. How far back does folk music stretch? When we try to identify, I think of, was it Percy Grainger who went around and wrote down what amounted to folk tunes?
He did, but people have forever. Mendelssohn would wander the hills and write down shepherd tunes that he heard. And I don't think anybody was taking notes at the beginning. You can't tell us just when it started. I think it's part of the human condition to listen and react and create.
You are, 14 seasons in. That's amazing. And you keep it fresh, and it's amazing. There's always such a nice variety on your season. And unexpected combinations like the Good, Bad, Luckies. I'm fascinated by the combination of musicians in this.
Oh, this concert is wonderful. We had such fun last December with Tim Grimm and Krista DeTore, Joe Crookston, who are good friends and preeminent artists, had a very fertile and wonderful time. We've brought them back together. They're named after one of Joe Crookston's songs, a very memorable line from the song where I think it's the old folk tale of a Chinese farmer whose horse runs away and people say, oh, what bad luck. Maybe it's hard to say. It turns out the things that we think may be bad luck have a good side to them and vice versa.
Oh.
That's where the name comes from. But great combo. That's our December 14 show, The Good, Bad, Lucky.
Mm-hmm.
So we're bringing them back.
And even before then, there's a chance. Anybody who's interested in folk music should probably know about FARM. Tell us about FARM.
Folk Alliance Regional Midwest. And that's happening later this month, right at the end of the month. There is a regional gathering in St. Louis where we will hear showcases of artists for hours and hours and on end, nonstop performances by emerging artists, established artists, workshops, all kinds of sessions. It is a way for the artists to become known, to be heard by presenters, and we and my friends Joe and Joanne and Phil and Carla and Beth and I will be there from the Indie Folk Series identifying some new artists that we may want to book.
It sounds amazing. It sounds like a place to get together with other impresarios.
I have not been there, but I understand that you plan to sleep before and after the event. So for 3 days, there may not be much sleep involved. There's just too much going on at FARM.
I love the idea of people just going up and down the hallways in a hotel and listening at the door and saying, yeah, I want to hear these people, and just coming in.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be like an irresistible
one big time. House concert. Love it. Tell us about, I realize we're kind of going, if you have your calendar open on your phone listening to this, I'm sorry, we're going all over the map here. We're doing a little freeform idea mongering here. Open mic night?
That's always a favorite. The Saturday after Thanksgiving is always open mic night. And we have people play 10-minute sets, two or three songs, and then we switch them up. And sometimes it's just somebody who doesn't perform much and they want to try their hand at it. You might find a touring artist who says, hey, I've got a little new material I want to try out. And so we have great variety through the evening. We go often well more than the 2 hours we're scheduled with these little 10-minute sets. And the money all goes for a good cause.
Do they throw you out at some point?
At some point,
At some point, the caretaker of the building needs to close up, I'm sure. How do you determine the order?
People come and sign up. They sign up at 6 p.m. for open mic night, and mm-hmm. they just choose their time that they'd like to perform.
And got it.
When the slate's filled, everybody else becomes audience.
So you've been playing with an idea about this season, not just Indie Folk Series, but Indie Folk Selfies.
Oh, that's fun. We've started to encourage people to take a picture at the concert. We have always had a banner that hangs over the stage.
Mm-hmm.
And my goal is to try to get myself and the banner in the picture. But there's so many great little moments there as we're setting up or during the concert, if your camera does not go click, if your phone doesn't make a camera sound.
Sure.
when you click it. But we like people to post and tweet the indie folk selfies. You can extend beyond the actual concert times to maybe yourself with an instrument or listening to music.
That's a hoot. I like that.
Indie folk selfies.
Love it. Love it.
And well, we have a Facebook page, so you can post them there. And all this information is at indiefolkseries.org.
Sure. And for people who are like, oh, gosh, I haven't been to a folk music concert in a little while, there's actually an opportunity very soon after you're hearing this conversation on October 18th. I love the name of this band. Tell us about them.
Shiny and the Spoon. And I think this may be some of the people that Phil and Carla and Joe and Joanne found at Farm last year. It's a great group, started as a duo, and they now have bass and percussion added. It's Amber Nash, Jordan Neff. They have a really kind of fun, catchy sound based on traditional folk music, but kind of a new breath of fresh air there, some clever lyrics. So it's got one foot in Americana and then another foot in just creating things of the moment with really good instrumentals as well.
That leads me to a question. What is the role, or is there a role for improvisation during performances of folk music?
Varies with the act and with the mood at the moment, I guess. Some people will carefully prepare everything, note for note, have it all figured out. But very often, and less often than with jazz, certainly more often than with classical music, you find people trying a different lick or changing up the lyrics or changing up who does a solo when and just what that looks like. So part of the real charm for me is that creativity of the moment when it's done live.
Mm-hmm.
You can always get something to sound more polished in the studio when you do it over and over and you carefully craft just what you want to happen. But when it's in the moment, there is nothing to replace a live performance.
Isn't that why we still go? When we could all be sitting at home in our little cocoon with our earbuds listening to the most polished recording ever.
I think it's for that, and it's also communal. It's part of our nature as social beings to experience things together. And when you have somebody who's expressive, and this whole genre of what we're calling folk music is very often expressive of the fundamental human condition and the things that bind us together out of our humanity, there's something irreplaceable to me about going through that together.
Speaking of communities, you are encouraging ladies to come out. Well, men too, but for Ladies' Night in January, a reason to come out in midwinter, right?
Coming out is always suitable in your way and your time, but we're urging people to also show up, yes, for...
I thought we were going to get through a conversation without a pun.
Oh, no. This is Dan Hickel. There will be puns.
Okay.
We have something real fun in January. Our January 17th concert is Emerging Artists, and we're calling it Ladies' Night because mm-hmm. we have two young women who we think are real up-and-comers and will together make a wonderful program one after another, Adrienne Fraley and Bria McTavish. And we're just really looking forward to hearing them. Again, bright lights, good creative younger artists that may not be familiar to most of our audience.
Now, you have a relatively new e-newsletter or a retooled e-newsletter?
We have had e-newsletters going back to Yahoo groups lists and before that to my own personal emails. We thought that every 12, 13 years or so, you ought to take a fresh look, have a new logo. We had Marcy and Marcy design us a cool new logo that you'll see at our website. And we have a new improved email newsletter format. And if you sign up for the list, we'll send you concert announcements. No spam, nothing commercial. We won't share it, but we'll just remind you of the concerts. So we've tried to freshen that up. We have a fairly new tagline, Vibe, Venue, Variety.
Vibe, Venue, Variety. Yeah, okay.
The letter V was on sale that day. But I mentioned the banner that we take with indie folk selfies.
Yeah.
We have a new banner. The banner we have been using up through last season was created in 2002 for our second season, and it says a new place for acoustic music. And we thought, we're not new anymore, but we want to keep it fresh. So we've got our cool new logo on our cool new banner. And we're having better quality wine this year.
What?
Yes.
How'd that happen?
Well, part of the experience is sharing not just the music, but a little nosh and a beverage with folks. And we have coffee, of course, because it's a coffee house to some extent. And we have water. And we've had wine and beer available for a donation. And we just thought, you know, this is fun. And we like good music and good quality eats and wine. So we'll just try to up the quality a little bit. So I have my wife, Beth, to thank for that, for saying, let's get a little better wine this year. So when you throw a couple bucks in the basket, I hope you'll like what you find in your glass.
Sharon Gamble with Dan Hankel, one of the organizers of the 14th Annual Indie Folk Series. Performances are at the UUI Church at 615 West 43rd Street near Butler. Again, 615 West 43rd near Butler. You can get directions and concert listings at indiefolkseries.org. Again, indiefolkseries.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll find out what's going on this fall at the Cabaret at the Columbia Club.
I'll get a preview of this year's Ann Katz Festival of Books and Arts.
And I'll talk with dance kaleidoscope dancer Liberty Harris about her upcoming retirement. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.